Welcome to the Pin Down, your Detroit Pistons podcast. I'm your host, Wes Davenport from Motor City Hoops and Detroit Bad Boys.
And I'm Blake Silverman, writer for Detroit Bad Boys, covering everything from the Pistons to the NBA draft and the Motor City Cruise.
And we could not be more excited to have our guy, Bryce Simon, co-host of the Pistons Pulse, which, again, everyone, if you're not listening to that, please do. I obviously produce it, but Bryce is the host. He's joined us back. Welcome back to the show. We're pumped to have you on the Bucks Draft.
What's up, guys, man? Wes, listen, Blake, I love you, but I got to spit to Wes a little bit here. I've just been thinking recently, man. Like, think about where we started, where we're at, what we're doing.
I know.
Bro, we were doing 100 views or whatever. Like, we weren't even views. We weren't even on YouTube. We were getting 100 downloads on Apple, Spotify, whatever. Now, not only are you and Blake crushing those numbers over here on the Pin Down, you know, you're producing the Pistons Pulse. We're backed by the Detroit Free Press. I've been able to do some other cool stuff. I'm just like, bro, like, I never thought. People are like, what's your goal with this? I'm like, I've surpassed what I thought my goal was going to be like 12 months ago and like 50,000 views ago. Like, the first time we hit 1K, Wes, I was like, this is incredible. Oh my gosh, we're amazing. I don't know. Like,
I'm
sorry.
We threw a party the episode after that.
That's what I'm saying. I don't mean, like, I know this probably comes off a little bit like bragging or whatever, but I'm super proud of us, man. Like, I feel like we've done so much. I'm super proud of you, Blake. I'm proud of you guys and everything you guys are doing. So big time stuff.
Thank you, Bryce. And yeah, I joked with Wes before. I think I forgot what it was. It might have been trade deadline or something, but you guys recorded the Pistons Pulse at like 7 or 8 a.m. And then we were on here at 7 p.m. So that was a long day for Wes with a work day in between. And you should definitely give yourself a pat on the back. Like, everything you're doing on the Piston side, plus the game theory with Sam and all the Substack projects that you've been kind enough to bring us in on. You're doing great stuff. So thank you for taking some time and joining us.
We're about to have a really fun one too. Everybody, quick peek behind the curtain. We're going to do our fourth iteration of the mock over on the Basketball Bulletin. We're going to do a trade mock draft where it's encouraged. You don't have to make a trade, but it's going to take us probably a week to put this whole thing together. But Blake's in on it. Wes is in on it. I don't remember. I know, Wes, I gave you the Spurs. Blake, I don't know if you remember the teams.
I have the Jazz and the Raptors.
Okay, there we go. So this will be a lot of fun. So
yes, 100%.
High pressure with the Spurs. High pressure. I don't know if I'm ready for it. I'm going to do my best. We'll see. We'll see what happens with it. But you know what? Let's just jump right into some questions because we don't have a ton of time. I think we just got an hour. So wanted to just dive right into your thoughts on the class more in general. This first question is from at Marco Verona on Twitter. He wants you to break down the players probably just in like the top 20 into tiers and then kind of pick one or two of those guys in each of those tiers that you think you would like the most for the Pistons, let's say.
All right, so I have my first group of guys almost in one tier. I will say Sar has always been just a notch above, and he may be in a tier by himself. But I'll give off the nine names of kind of my first tier. That's Alex Sar, Topic, Zachary Risacher, Ron Holland, Steph Castle, Donovan Klingon, Dalton Connect, Reed Shepard, Matas Buzelis. Those are the first nine names in my first tier. Listen, the guy I like the most outside of Sar, who I don't think we need to talk about anymore as Pistons fans. I think that's the one guy that's off the board now. I still think Zachary Risacher is the guy. Like, I think if he falls to five, and I'm sure people are wondering if they're, I think it's realistic. I don't know that it's probable, whatever. I think he makes a ton of sense. Yeah, Derek asked, is there, I think there's a chance. I don't know how big it is. One of these point guards is going to go, I think, in the first few picks. I think there's a chance Klingon goes in the first three or four picks as well. So I think there's a chance Risacher falls. He is definitely my favorite guy in that tier.
Yeah, and just one thing that actually just happened today. We're recording on
Thursday. I saw your tweet, Blake.
Yeah, it broke my brain. So Zachary Risacher had a game today in the playoffs over in the French League. They won. He had a nice game, but Landry Fields, Quinn Snyder, Kyle Korver with the Hawks were sitting courtside watching that. So that like broke my brain a little bit. I was like, is there a world where he can go one? I don't know if maybe this was planned before the lottery. I know Dwayne Casey was out there earlier in the season scouting Risacher too. So he might still be in play at one as well. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, for a long time, I never had him one on my board. But for a long time, for the Pistons specifically, and potentially some other teams, I would have taken Reese Shea. He hasn't shot it well. There was about a month stretch there where he went from like 45% from three down to, like I say down to, he's down to 39%. This is almost a 60-game sample for playing most of this year as an 18-year-old in a professional league. I think I looked in before today, his last four games, he was 6 of 12 from three. So he had kind of righted the ship. And I told Wes, I went and watched all of those attempts. He was just missing short. The jumper looks good to me. I don't know what you think, Blake, but I think the jumper form looks good. I'm willing to buy it. So I still think on a Piston-specific board, he would be my number two player behind Alex Saar.
Yeah, I think just on like the jumper, like mechanically, it looks good to me. I don't know if there was... Like, I think we all might have been overthinking it a bit with that, like, that cold stretch. And, like, as we should, you know, it's this is a crucial time for him. He still has some basketball to play, so who knows what he's going to put on tape. But he's showing some stuff, and, I mean, I think if he can fall to five, it's definitely possible. But now, especially after seeing the Hawks out there, I'm just questioning it a little bit more.
I mean, they're definitely – I think they'll definitely look at – all of those guys that I just talked about, right? Like, I don't think my top tier is any different than most teams. Maybe there's a guy here or there. Most people would have Rob Dillingham in their top tier. I have him leading my second tier. So I'll give that real quick. So in my next tier of players, I have Cody Williams, Rob Dillingham, Isaiah Collier, Kyle Filipowski, Jared McCain, Devin Carter, Tristan Da Silva, Tinjon Saloon, Wes's guy, and Deron Holmes the second, my guy. So I think names that are interesting to me there, obviously Cody Williams is interesting. Filipowski is a guy I'm a little higher on as a dribble, pass, and shoot big. Jared McCain can really shoot the ball. Talk about a jumper that you can really buy into. And I will say that Wes with Tinjon Saloon, that's a very interesting name. I still think like five is a little bit rich. I think I just saw something that was talking about the Spurs at eight maybe being in play for Saloon. I would not be surprised if he ends up late lottery and maybe even breaks the top 10, though.
Let's hang on Filipowski for a second, because sure. I don't think, Blake, you and I have talked about him too much. What's the mold of player that he is? What's kind of the pitch for Filipowski potentially at five, even though you said maybe that's a little too high?
I don't think I would go Filipowski that high. I think if we're talking Filipowski, we're talking Pistons trading back with, you know, whatever, end of the lottery is where I would say Filipowski. You know, you're looking 10 at the very highest, probably. I don't think I would break my tiers for a player like Kyle Filipowski, but he's a 7-footer who, again, can dribble, pass, and shoot. I'm just kind of in love with this archetype right now, to be quite honest, guys. We see what these guys are able to do in terms of opening up the floor for their teams. And then he is not an anchor of your defense. I want to be clear about this. He's not Chet, who's doing it on both ends or something like that. But I think he's a neutral defender in terms of he moves a little better than what people think. He does have really good size. And I think the offensive value is where you're like, okay, this is huge for us. And then he's neutral defensively. So the overall package makes you feel pretty good.
Just curious, in on your board, how far apart do you have Filipowski and like a Deron Holmes? Like you brought up that you like, I like him too. I mean, a little biased. I'm an A10 guy. I like seeing how his like game grew, but they're sort of similar molds of players to me because Holmes can stretch the floor a little bit. So where are you at with those two specifically?
Yeah. So same tier, five spots apart. And I'll be honest, like Deron is one of my favorite players. And him and Peyton Sanford are probably the two players I've watched more film. Like, I feel pretty confident that I know more about Deron Holmes' game than just about anybody. And that's where it's hard for me sometimes, guys, with my board, is there are players I've watched way more. I've watched every player, I would assume, that we talk about. But there are some players I've watched significantly more, and Deron Holmes is one of those. So, yeah, Deron would actually be in my second tier of players. I don't consider Saar in his own. I kind of consider it a half tier. So I would say those first nine names I gave are my tier one, and then the next names are my tier two. And I want to be clear, because like Sam Vecenie, his tier one, tier two, tier three, it means the same thing every year. And so for him, there are no tier one players in this draft. there are no tier two players in this draft. You know, these guys we're talking about at the top would be tier three for him. I don't do that. I'm just saying these are the best players I see. They're in the first tier for me, second tier. I think I go to six tiers. My first one is like potential top five picks, then lottery mid first round, potential first round, strong second round, draftable, and then some guys that I just find interesting.
So maybe before we look quickly at like a tier three, which would probably assume be end of first round or early-ish second, like you're just saying, is there anybody for you in that tier two that you think maybe could have an argument for the Pistons to break tiers and maybe look at five? Or is the gap just too large?
I just don't think that enough of the guys in my first tier are going to be off the board. So what's the worst case? Sar goes, Risache goes, Kinect goes, and Buzelis go somehow in the first four. So that leaves probably you Topic. That's still leaves you. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, that still leaves Topic. Okay, let's throw him out. You don't want him. Ron Holland, he doesn't shoot it well enough. Steph Castle doesn't shoot it well enough. Well, Klingon's still there. I think there's an absolute case for that. And Reed Shepherd is still there. So I don't see the scenario where enough of those tier one guys are off the board where you would need to break tiers. Now, this, of course, is me, right? Like, I maybe Tinjon Saloon is tier one for them or whoever. And, like, listen, it's possible. Guys, I took Dalton Kinect at 7 for the Blazers like 2 months ago and kind of got crushed for it. And now, all of a sudden, if you get Dalton Kinect at 7 for the Blazers, if you get Kinect and Saloon at 7 and 14 for the Blazers, you just hit a grand slam for their draft. So who knows where people are going to be at even a month from now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you a bit. Like, I was thinking about that too. Like, who would be a guy that the Pistons would reach for? Like, I was thinking about guys who would fit. I brought up McCain and like the Detroit Bad Boys like reaction we did just for the sake of throwing out names and sleeper guys. And another one I brought up was actually like Tyler Smith, who is way too like lower on the board for five, but I think he fits a mold too, sort of as that stretch four, stretch big that fills a need for the Pistons. But I'm with you. I don't really see a way that they reach for one of those guys like in your second tier or even beyond at five. I think it would have to be some sort of trade back scenario too.
Tyler Smith is an interesting name as well. I'm a little bit lower on Smith than other people. You will find big boards with Tyler Smith or mock drafts with Tyler Smith in the lottery. I don't know about top 10, but in the lottery, my big thing with Tyler Smith is what else does he do offensively? And the defense is a real concern, especially when you're talking about the Pistons. Like, okay, what does that end up meaning? Like, you know, I would like to have a, I think this is where McCain makes a lot of, I think McCain's going to hold up defensively because that dude is strong in his upper body and then he can really shoot it. So he's an interesting player for sure. Devin Carter, like if you think Devin Carter can really shoot and space the floor, that dude just tested out of his mind at the combine. He can really, really defend. That might be a name that would interest a lot of Pistons fans because he's a real two-way player, like could be true 3-and-D and play, you know, second unit point guard.
Yeah, and he, just staying on Devin Carter for a second, like that dude took some tough shots this year.
He
like, and he still shot at a very high clip. So he's an interesting name. I know I've seen him. I actually think one of them was a mock you and Sam did, like gets mocked to the Miami Heat all the time because that's just like the fit there. But it's there with the Pistons too. I mean, I'm not sure there are many teams that would not make sense for Devin Carter.
Yeah, no, I mean, Miami makes a ton of sense. I'm just not sure he's going to make it to Miami at this point. You know, a month ago, I think that 2 months ago, that guy's definitely available now. I mean, him and McCain both have been huge. Trying to think like the biggest risers for some of these guys. I know, obviously, Kinect and Reed compared to the beginning of the season.
Tristan Da Silva.
Yes, that's a great name. So McCain, Carter, Da Silva are all in order on my big board. And those are three of the biggest risers, I think, over the end of the season, NCAA tournament, all that. Da Silva's a real interesting player. He had really good size at the combine. Very, very interesting player.
So how about tier three? Because we did see the Pistons obviously trade back into the end of the first round last year for Marcus Sasser. So assuming, you know, not assuming, but if they were to do something like that again, who are some of the names that maybe Pistons fans should watch for?
Yeah, so this is a much bigger tier for me, so I'll try to like scream through this, but Jalen Tyson, Bub Carrington, Eves Missy, Tyler Kolek, Zach Edey, Tyler Smith, Jacoby Walter, I think would be a real interesting name. You know, Jacoby Walter was a name that, again, 2 months ago, 3 months ago, you're talking about lottery pick, and he just didn't quite have the season. If you trade back into the end of the first round and get that kid, I think he can really shoot. I don't think he was quite as good defensively. Here's a bunch of wings, guys. Keyshawn George, Baylor Shireman, Furphy, Bobby Klempman, Justin Edwards, Peyton Sanford, Alex Caravan, all of those guys. It's just kind of what's your flavor in terms of who do you think is the best floor spacer, who defends a little bit, has the right size, those type of things. Those are all names that make a lot of sense. And I'll throw one more out. Ryan Dunn can't shoot a lick, but if you want somebody that can really defend, there's an argument he's the best non-big man defender in the draft.
Yeah, a lot of interesting names to me. Like, I know Shireman just had a great combine. There weren't a ton of like top prospects who played 5-on-5 there. Shireman was on the court and he really, stuck out there. So I think there's a ton of names for the Pistons. Like, Dunn is an interesting one. One I was thinking about today is like, what, like, how far do you think Johnny Furphy will fall down now? Cause I think that's like, if the Pistons don't get a wing at five, like, he's a project who some people had like in the lottery and then towards the end of the season maybe fell a bit. So I was thinking maybe that's a name that the Pistons could target early 20s, mid 20s, and try to find a trade back into.
I think that's where I would have him right now. You know, him, Keyshawn George, those were two names that were really hot at one point and then kind of leveled off. I think those are those two guys, Jacoby Walter, those are guys that are real interesting. And then again, you can go with a little bit older. Shireman is an older player. Bobby Klempman is a couple years out. Caravan's a little bit older. Peyton Sanford's a little bit older. And we can talk about some second round wings that are in my next tier as well. Some non-wings, like if you wanted to go, let's say you went wing. Let's say you got Zach Risacher at number 5. I don't know how far Zach Edey falls. I have him in this tier in the mid-20s, but I mean, he is massive, massive, can set screens, can defend a little bit. Tested pretty well. Khalil Ware is a little bit more of a wild card, but Khalil Ware is in that same mold of he may be able to stretch the floor, also catch lobs, and defend a little bit. There's some motor questions with him. And then Oso Iguodaro is another guy I really like. I don't know how great the role is going to come together for him in the NBA because he can't shoot a lick, but man, he can pass and hits the little floater. Think Isaiah Hartenstein with the floater and the passing. Not as big as him, doesn't rebound the same way, but Oso's an interesting big guy that maybe you could get at the end of the first, or if you had to trade up to even the beginning of the second.
Yeah, I wonder too, like, even thinking about the Pistons at 53, like, what could they think about for that pick, or if they want to trade up? Like, I was wondering even if they would want to address like a backup point guard.
Sure.
Yeah, you have Marcus Sasser, but we've seen like maybe he's not a true point guard. So I want, like, KJ Simpson looked good at the combine.
Yes, he did.
I wonder, I've been thinking about like Jamal Shedd too. Like, I don't know how much he makes sense now that you have like Sasser on the team, but he checks a lot of boxes for the Pistons too. But I just don't know if like the timing is right. So, I mean, Wes, you too, like, do you think that they could try to find one of those smaller guards? Cause there's a lot of interesting like small point guards later on as well.
I'll go. Okay. So yeah, Jamal Shedd is a guy. I'm not sure he's going to last to 53, to be honest with you. I have him in the tier that we just talked about as well. KJ Simpson is a guy that's in my next tier, which I would call just like strong second round picks. Like, these are guys, you know, if you want a guy just to kind of run the show and maybe be the best ball screen operator outside of Nikola Topic, look at Juan Nunez. Like, that guy can really pass, can really operate a ball screen. So that's AJ Mitchell, really created at the combine in the 5-on-5s. I'm looking at some undrafted guys here. Some people really like Mark Sears. I'm not as high. Here's a name. Tristan Newton, the guard out of Connecticut, would be a real interesting, whether it's a second round pick, maybe undrafted. I have him a little bit lower than some people. Tristan Newton would be an interesting guard to add to the mix. And I would just, you know, wait at 53 and draft him there if he was going to fall that far. According to my board, he would be there. But if that's what the Pistons were looking for, Tristan Newton would be an interesting name.
Would any of that have an impact on Sasser to you? I'm curious, wanted to ask quickly. Blake, I'm wondering with you as well, since you're obviously looking at it, and it's not like Sasser had an incredible rookie year. So what are the thoughts there?
It might make him more expendable towards me. Like, I'm not necessarily sure what his value on the trade market would be, but I think just seeing him in his rookie season, like, we've seen that he can play off ball and be that, I mean, guy who can catch fire off the bench for you, and he doesn't necessarily need the ball in his hands to do so. Like, Bryce, when you bring up Juan Nunez, like, I wonder if that's a name. I'm not really sure where he's at, but I wonder if that's a guy, if you can snag him at whatever point, like if he's a stash player that doesn't necessarily come over right away, and then someone's rights you retain whenever it makes sense. Cause like, he's a, like, might be one of the best passers in the draft too.
Yeah. And I will say, like, he's going to turn 20 in June. He's 6'4", you know, just a real crafty primary creator. I'll just say, like, this is, I have him at 52 on my board. So like, he's right where we're talking about with this Pistons second round pick. The other thing I want to quickly point out, remember, some of these guys are going to go back. So we have a little less than 2 weeks now. I believe it was 2 weeks from yesterday on Wednesday, which would make it the 29th. Those guys have to make a decision. What that's going to do is it's going to move people up the boards, right? If Furphy doesn't think he's going to be a first round pick and goes back to Kansas, well, now everybody slots up a position, you know, Alex Carey, whoever those guys are. And there's going to, every year it surprises us too, some of the guys that end up going back. So while I have Juan Nunez at 52 right now, he could be at 45, you know, 2 weeks from now with nothing else other than just seven guys above him decided to get out of the draft. So that will really change some things also.
Yeah. And one name that fit that mold for me, like one guy that you brought up that sort of fell off my radar, because I kind of just assumed that he was coming back, is Bub Carrington. But he seems like he's really like rising a lot. Now I'm expecting him to stay in this draft. I have had a ton of fun watching him. So, I mean, I hope he stays in the draft and lands in a perfect situation. I mean, I'm not necessarily sure if he makes sense for the Pistons, but that's a fun player. Like, I wouldn't be mad at if they ended up with him.
Yeah. I don't know what his fit with Detroit would be either, but Bub's a lot of fun, really good pull up shooter, can play on the ball. And then I thought his defense got a whole lot better throughout the season. Now this kid, you know, he'll lose focus at times, maybe off the ball, but I watched him guard Hunter Salas, who I think Hunter Salas is a good player. He's in the tier into first round, top of the second that we talked about earlier. I just didn't mention him. But Bub really guarded him well. Bub really long, and when he's locked in defensively, he can be real impactful. He was, if people aren't familiar, he like had a triple-double his first game or second game of his career at Pittsburgh, and then like shot up boards, and then it leveled off a little bit, and I think he's gaining momentum back now.
All right, Bryce, I want to ask you this before we get into some other questions. So this is a question from me. Outside of Risa Shea, who's the player at five that you think is just the best fit pairing with Detroit? Could be, you know, personality, could be talent, could be skill set, however you want to spin it. What's your favorite like pairing there for the Pistons?
Oh man. Listen, I think Dalton Knecht would be awesome offensively. I don't know what that means defensively for the Pistons because he does have a long ways to go. But that guy can really here's my thing with Dalton Knecht. I think at the very least, he spaces the floor and makes a bunch of threes. And then the higher ceiling is he attacks closeouts and still is able to knock down mid-range jumpers like we saw at Tennessee. And he's a big-time athlete, and he just showed that at the combine. And it wasn't just the vertical testing. It was the quickness testing and stuff as well. I think he has a chance to be much better defensively than what we've seen. I've talked about this ad nauseum, but I always bring it up. His path of being a late bloomer, playing zone in high school, junior college, smaller level D1, didn't even have 12 months at Tennessee. I just think there's more of a growth for a normal 22, 23-year-old. Reed Sheppard is hard not to get excited about, guys, as well. So those are probably the two names. I want to, Matos, I feel like, has been talked about a lot recently. I think Matos makes a ton of sense if you told me he was going to shoot 35% from three. And I just don't know if I believe that.
All right, so we actually got a question on that. This is from Mr. Jones, so expand on it some more. He wants to know why you're not totally sold on Matos. Is it just the jump shot? Is there other stuff as well?
Well, I also think he has to get stronger. Like, he gets pushed. I thought him going to the Ignite, I pegged this way before the Ignite season even started. I thought it was an awful decision. I didn't think that that's where he should go play for his game and where it was at. Now, if he didn't want to go to college and all of that, that's none of my business. I just didn't think it was going to show his game the best. Plus, that team didn't have a point guard. So offensively, there was nobody creating easy looks for him and those type of things. I told you this, Wes. When I stopped evaluating Matos as a wing and started evaluating him just as a forward and potentially as a big, I liked his game a whole lot more, because now the passing is a major plus for that role and archetype. The off the dribble is a major plus for that role and archetype, but he still has to shoot 33 to 35% on volume, or none of it matters. Cause I think he's going to be good defensively, but he's not going to be like all NBA level. Like, it may end up being neutral because he isn't going to stay in front. He doesn't have the quickest feet defensively. His archetype makes a ton of sense with Detroit. It's just like, you can't add another 27% three-point shooter or whatever he ends up being. So it really comes down to the jumper with him.
Yeah, I have similar thoughts with Matos too. I think, like, where I am with this Pistons draft, and I mean, I feel like it's glaringly obvious, they need to address or bring someone in that can either protect the rim or shoot the ball. Ideally both. I don't know if you're going to get both where they are, but Matos, like, in theory should do that. Like, we don't know if his season with the G League is an anomaly. I mean, there's enough of a sample size to make you concerned, but I mean, great shooter in high school. I don't know. Like, I guess, Bryce, a question for you is, like, how much stock are you putting into what he did in high school versus that, like, drop off he had this year adjusting to the NBA 3-point line and obviously much greater competition levels?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to weigh it in some capacity, right? Like, at the end of the day, we do have a sample of this guy being a good shooter. And here's what I want to point out. He played at Sunrise Christian. Like, we're not talking about some high school in Southwest Kansas where I played and he was just way better than everybody else. Like, Sunrise,
Donovan Mitchell went there, right?
Yeah, so, like, Sunrise is real, like, a real play. Like, this Grady Dick just came out of there. I believe Buddy Hield was a Sunrise Christian kid. So, like, you have to respect that and value that. Now, to your point, level of competition went up. Three-point line got further away. Was it just a one-year adjustment to that, or was there something more? And I will be the first to admit, I'm not a shooting mechanics guy. That's not what I do. Like, I don't think that's my strong point at all whatsoever. And so I'm not always great at, I can tell you, like, oh, that looks fluid, that looks smooth, or that looks like it has a hitch in it, but I don't always know what that necessarily means and how bad it is or whatever. Maybe there's people that are better at me than doing, or I know there are people better than me at doing that. So I take it, I use it as a part of the puzzle. And that's what's kind of, I think we always have to remember, we have to use all of this stuff. High school shooting numbers are there. G League Ignite wasn't. I think you have to add in the context of the G League Ignite and what it is and how much of a disaster that was this year. They literally canceled the program because it was so bad. That's how bad it was. And so we're not just making stuff up. It was not good situation, but honestly, I wonder what I would think if we didn't have that year of good shooting, Blake. Because if he didn't have, like, that's really what we're all, like, clinging to, right? Is, well, he did shoot it well in high school. And it's like, if that's all we can find, is that good? Is that enough to buy into?
Do you think the high school shooting is why we're more confident in Matos eventually developing into a league average or above average shooter compared to a name like Ron Holland, who was in a similar scenario? And that was, like, an interesting name. I think Laz asked us a question about him last week, and I think our main concern is the shot. So I guess I'm just interested in your take. Like, why are we more confident about Modest's development compared to Ron's?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably right. I think that's fair. Ron didn't have a rep as a shooter coming out of high school. His rep was slasher athlete, you know, played his butt off on the defensive end, disruptor, all of those things, where Matas's was like more of a, you know, floor spacer and a shooter. And that rep does carry with you. The thing is, like, the numbers backed it up, though. Like, I want to be clear. It's not like people just said, oh, he's a shooter. Like, he shot over 40%. I have the number somewhere. I could pull him up, but
it's like 42 or something. Yeah.
Like, it was legit. And again, we're talking about it playing against the best high school programs in the country doing that. And so I think it's warranted and it's fair. And I don't think Matas's shot looks broke. Like, I don't think, now to be fair, no. I don't mind Ron Holland shooting stroke either. Like, I think there's a chance he does shoot it, excuse me, decently. And with both of these guys, we haven't seen a hesitancy to take shots like Steph Castle. Steph Castle makes me nervous because I literally watched him turn down open shots and it made me nervous seeing that, you know, just talk about sheer volume of attempts. So I think there's like varying levels of all of these different things.
Something I've been thinking about with Mata shots since our last Pistons Pulse episode, where you were actually able to look up how he shot in the mid range on pull up jump shots. And it was actually pretty good, if I remember the synergy numbers right. And what I've been trying to figure out, and I'd be curious to get your take on it, is that a good sign for his future as an NBA three-point shooter? Or does that just mean, like, he hit a wall? That's about as far back as he's going to shoot.
So here's the thing. I don't know. No, it's a good question. Here's where I wish I would have, like, made it to another level to give better perspective. I never had to make that jump. You know, you never had to make that jump either, Wes, right? So, like, you had to go from high school to college and those type of things. And you kind of understood that. But that jump from college to NBA, how much, like, how hard would it have been to stretch it out? Like, obviously it's hard. Why are some guys not able to do it? Is it a mental thing? Is it a, you know, mechanics thing? Is it, you know, truly physical, you know, whatever. And so that's what, like, I don't have the perspective or quite the understanding of why would it be such a huge deal for him? I kind of lean more towards, okay, it was his first year trying to do it. He's playing against professionals. His shot diet's probably not as easy as what it could be. You know, like, you put him on the Pistons, ideally Cade and Ivy or whoever's running the show are creating good looks for him, and he's able just to stand there in the corner, catch, and knock it down. But I don't know. Like, I assume there are some guys, there's just a wall. Like, they can only get it to so far, and then their touch goes away, or they don't have it in their foundation, whatever it is.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch. So, all right, another interesting guy that we got asked about. This is by Rames in the DBB comments. Wants to know about Klingon, because Donovan Klingon did not test all that well. So the question is, with Klingon testing as the slowest guy at the combine and multiple drills, does that give any concern for how well he's going to be able to transition into guarding in space in the NBA? And that was something that's more or less viewed as a positive for a guy as big as him, that he could move pretty well, or at least on tape.
Yes, I would say that it was like he could move, but I don't know that it was necessarily like you're going to be able to switch with him or anything like that. I think with Klingon, it was just like a recovery ability and some of the short area stuff. He's just so big. You know, I was looking through the numbers there. Like, he was pretty low. I'll be honest, guys, I don't know how much to take away from some of the testing. I'm a little bit old school in that, like, I just kind of want to trust what I watched and saw. And, like, so the combine testing will tell you that Zach Edey is a better athlete than Donovan Klingon, right? I don't think I ever watched those two guys and thought the same thing. And so,
yeah,
their practical athleticism is a real thing. I told this on Game Theory last night. When I was in high school, if you put me on a track, I would have looked like the worst athlete there. I would have lost every event. I wouldn't have won anything. But you put me on a basketball floor and I looked like the best athlete because I moved. I could do the functional basketball things. I could change direction and cut. I could jump in traffic. I didn't jump higher than a lot of kids. I could just do it with people around me. That changes for people on a basketball floor sometimes when there's bodies around them, they get bumped a little bit, those type of things. I'm going to trust my eyes in that I thought Donovan Klingon moved pretty darn well whenever I was watching the film.
Yeah, I was wondering, like, just looking at the combine this week, I was wondering, or I guess debating internally, like, how much stock to put into some of these things. Like, do you think that, I mean, obviously the measurements and the testing is important, but is it as important for a guy like Klingon, who we know how he's contributed to winning basketball on the highest level in college, versus a guy who's really just maybe in that like second round, like fringe on people's like top 60, them going in and impressing? So I guess, you mentioned that you might not even be sure, but what do you take from like some of these numbers that we're getting this week?
I'll be honest, I didn't move a single person in my top 27 on my board from the last 3 days. I didn't touch anybody. And the guys I did move was mostly from the scrimmages. And you just get to see them play with other good players. You get to see the way they move. Listen, the guy that did maybe the best for himself was Enrique Freeman, a kid out of Akron, who I wasn't even super familiar with. It has nothing to do with his testing. It's because he balled out in the 5-on-5s, and it started at the G League Combine, and then he went and played well in the 5-on-5 scrimmages, which I know somebody tweeted, I will not get off on that rant. I am very, very frustrated.
I'm with you.
With the broadcast of those combine scrimmages, but that would take up the last 23 minutes we have here. So I will leave that alone. But that, I think the 5-on-5s, here's what I want to caution people. Don't just look at the numbers at face value and just call it good. I think what is hard for us is we weren't there in person to see who competed, who cheated. We just gave Bub Carrington love, right? I saw a clip of Bub Carrington doing one of the shooting drills, and it was like the slowest. Like, I would have yelled at my 9-year-old son for how slow the jump shot was. Like, he caught it, set his feet. What? Like, there was no time to. Guys, like, we could all go shoot well if we had enough time to just prepare for it. Now, there is pressure there. That's the difference, right? Like, there's pressure with all those people in the stands. I think the shooting numbers especially, I'll take the sample size of what I've had from their season, from their career, and believe in that in terms of their shooting a lot more than I will some of these drills.
Well, and it's also an empty gym with NBA about to be NBA athletes. Pistons fans will very easily remember Andre Drummond just nailing 3-point shots all summer long, and that does not translate. So, like, I think Zach Edey shot pretty well. Klingon shot pretty well. Like, you're not banking on that. That's not like real.
I just saw a video going around the other day of Chris Birdman Anderson hitting a bunch of threes or something like that. And it's like, yes, this is all they do is play basketball for their lives.
Best players in the world.
They're going to be able to do it. Listen, like, I have videos on Twitter of me making like 45 out of 50 or something, and I'm old and out of shape and lazy, and I wasn't even that good. And I wasn't even that good of a shooter in college. All of these guys can shoot. When the game is on, when there's NBA level athletes, when the pressure's there, whenever stuff starts to play with your mind, it changes all of it.
Just one last thing. What I'm interested in with the combine is like some of those little tidbits you picked up. Like, I forgot who tweeted it. It might have been Gavoni, but I'm probably wrong. So whoever did, I'm sorry. It was that Cody Williams like stuck around and was like watching shooting drills after he was done testing, and just how much he loves the game. So like that told me a little something. So I feel like there's so much stuff that everyone probably picks up on when you're actually there that we obviously don't know. So I guess we all just need to go to Chicago next year for the broadcast and just to pick up on those little things.
No, the Williams thing was interesting. I don't know how much I'm going to weigh it, but I'm like, that's what I would do if I was a chance to be there. I don't need to go hang out in my hotel room or go do whatever. I want to go watch these other guys. I want to go watch the scrimmages. There's something about that that's like, and I'm not the highest guy on Cody Williams, but it seems like he loves ball. That means something to me. If I'm an NBA team and I'm going to invest in this guy, it seems like he really loves the game of basketball. I'm glad you brought that up, because at the end of the day, some of this stuff does not matter. We can watch as much film as we want. We saw it with Cam Whitmore. Guys, Cam Whitmore didn't go 20 because of the basketball stuff. Now, he may not have been number 5 like we thought on the Pistons polls. I don't want to lump Wes into that if it wasn't him, but for Amari and I. Okay.
Let me in. I was.
He may not have been number five, but he wasn't number 20 based solely on basketball. It was off the court intel and medicals that dropped him to 20. And that's stuff that, quite honestly, we're just not privy to.
All right. So a guy we were talking about earlier as kind of that like fringe tier two guy that's got a lot of fans, seems to be rising up boards, at Detroit Van Doe on Twitter, wants to know about Devin Carter potentially even at five. But more specifically, what would his fit be like next to Cade as a shooter, defender, and kind of secondary ball handler?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that would make sense. He's an older player, 22 years old. Like, I want to be clear. I would not take him at five, but I kind of understand the question. I think one thing that makes me a little bit nervous with Devin Carter, I'm pulling up the numbers here. So he shot really well this season, right? 38% on 6.5 attempts, 75% from the free throw line. Before this season, guys, he was a below 30% three-point shooter. So I don't always know how to weigh those things, but it's like a one-year sample. And here's another thing you have to consider. That was Devin Carter's team. Their best player coming into the year, Bryce Hopkins, ended up, I believe, tore his ACL. When it's your team, you don't have to worry about anybody else, anything else. Nobody's going to get mad at you if you take the shot. There's no such thing as a bad shot. That's a little different than when you're playing off Cade Cunningham and you have, you know, Simone Fontecchio and all of these other guys. I'm not saying Carter can't do it. I'm just saying the numbers look great. I am a little hesitant to be like, is he that level of a shooter? But Blake, you said it, man. Like, he hit tons of big time shots. He's a great example too. The jumper has a little bit of a hitch. It's like, it makes you a little bit nervous. He just hit so many. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to buy it. He's competitive. He's super athletic. I think his archetype makes sense to answer the question, Wes. He can shoot it. He can play on ball when Cade is out of the game, and he really defends. That's what I like about him, is then he can be the guy playing next to Cade that takes those matchups on the other end of the floor.
Yeah, for me, I'm in a similar boat. So I think it's like, you just have to debate if you're at five, like, do you like Devin Carter more than a Reed Shepherd who can really shoot the ball, or a Steph Castle who might be the best perimeter defender in this class? Like, is Devin Carter the perfect mixture of both of those that makes it, there's not a trade on the table, we're just going to do it? I mean, I think it's definitely a little like rich for me, but he's definitely like a dude in this class that any team is going to love to have.
Here's the other thing. And I know, like, some people hate the age thing, but I do think it matters, because like, at the end of the day, Devin Carter's had three more years of life to improve his basketball game compared to Reed Shepherd and Steph Castle. So you may say, well, Devin Carter did this, this, and this last year. And I'm like, what would Reed Shepherd do in college 2 years from now? What would Steph Castle, where is Steph Castle's jump shot 2 years from now? And so I do think that that context matters. And that's why I always bring it up with Connect, is he doesn't have 5 years of high level Division I basketball to improve and grow. Like, I always use Kevin McCuller. It's not fair to, I'm not like trying to call out Kevin McCuller. Kevin McCuller has 6 years of high level Division I basketball. He went through the draft process twice. Like, that's just a different level of experience than what Dalton Connect has. So yeah, I think Dalton Connect potentially has more of a ceiling to go than what a Kevin McCuller does. So I think all of those things do matter when we're looking at these guys.
Someone in the comments, Red Baron Arcade, brings up Sam Presti likes the Devin Carter type of guys. And he does remind me a little bit of like Cason Wallace. Is that a fair comparison for him, even in like the role that Wallace then ended up playing this season in OKC?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be fair in that, like, Cason was an on-ball guy at Kentucky. Now, again, Cason was a freshman at Kentucky when he came out, but really known for his defense, was really, really good, like, strong in his upper body. And then he has turned into, with OKC, he plays almost exclusively off the ball with OKC, but really defends, knocks down open shots. OKC is really fun. Like, they'll even use him as a pick and roll, short roll guy. Like, he'll go set. All these dudes get to run pick and roll with SGA. And he just makes their lives amazing. Like, Isaiah Joe ghost screening with SGA is just simply unfair for NBA teams to have to guard. But yeah, like, I think that could be the type of role. I think Cason probably ends up being a starter on that Thunder team eventually, a couple years down the road, when, you know, eventually they can't pay all of these guys. But I don't mind that. That makes some sense to me. And Kaysen went, what, 10 or whatever last year, something like that. So
somewhere around there.
In a stronger draft.
Right. So this next one, another guy that we've talked about briefly, but now we're all the way back up into our top 5, 6, 7. I can't remember where you put Reed. But our guy Camille wants to know your thoughts on Reed Sheppard specifically.
Yeah, I have Reed at number 8 on my board, just, you know, to be completely transparent. My thing with Reed is he can really the numbers are silly. Like, guys, the shooting numbers are silly. It's ridiculous. I remember during the middle of the year, people are skyrocketing Reed Sheppard up their board. I'm like, yeah, what's going to happen when he's not shooting 50% from three anymore? Ha, ha, ha. And then I was the idiot because he never stopped shooting 50% from three. He did it the entire season at Kentucky in the SEC. It was unbelievable. And he is athletic. He just showed it at the combine. Now, again, I'm not going to go crazy about the 42-inch vert. One, he may have gamed the system a little bit. He may have short-armed the standing reach a little bit to bump that those vertical numbers. But you have to remember some of that stuff as well. I would rather just look at the number of where did they touch. Like, just tell me the overall number. And then you're using those two numbers together, the standing reach and the vertical. But at the end of the day, where that shows up on film, Reed Sheppard is one of the best jump shot blockers in college basketball last year on the perimeter. Like, his ability to recover and block jump shots and contest jump shots was incredible. So here's my two things, Blake. I'm interested to hear what you think. Me and Wes have talked about this. I don't think Reed Sheppard's a point guard. I think he is an off the ball player. And two, I have some concerns about how well he stays in front of the, like, at the point of attack. How well does he stay in front of guys on the perimeter? And if he's not that, how much sense does he make next to Cade? I'm not as worried about him not being a point guard for this Pistons team. It's more the defensive things. But I'd be interested to see what you think as far as, is he a point guard? And then kind of the defensive upside or how good he can really be.
I could see him being more of like an on-ball or off-ball guard in the NBA. Like, I think it was probably Omari who was posting clips of like the interviews, and Reed said this is probably just something you say, but he's going to play the role, whatever the team needs. If the right thing to do is pass the ball, he'll pass the ball. If the right thing to do is shoot, he'll shoot. And like, what's so interesting about Reed to me is like, I don't ever think that he's going to be some like star, probably not like a first, second, maybe even third star in the NBA, but if he shoots anywhere close to what he did at Kentucky, I mean, that's an unreasonable like thing to ask, and it's not going to happen. But if he's like a very good 3-point shooter at the NBA level, like, that opens up so many things for the rest of the people on the floor. Like, if Reed Sheppard is getting guarded like an elite 3-point shooter at the NBA level, like, that really helps a team out and will open things up for Cade and whoever else it is. And also just like why Reed is so impressive to me is he was not one of these like high draft prospects coming into the year at Kentucky. He came off the bench for that team. There were so many mouths to feed, and he was the guy who stood out. Like, yes, there's like Rob Dillingham, who's going to be a high pick too, but Reed was just so efficient and so like smart on the floor that, you know, although like the size is definitely a concern, that's the only reason I really debate him, like the defense as well. But you just know that he's going to be a good NBA player for a long time.
Let's just be fair. You know what? Let's say his 3-point percentage goes down. What's fair? 10%. Let's say it goes down 10%. Oh, he's still a 42% 3-point shooter. Like, I think we'll take that, you know, 10%. We'll just drop it that. It's still okay. He's over 40%. So I think, if you really value floor spacing, this is the guy I think you believe in the most. And I think there is a world where he's a pretty good defender. It's just going to be a little bit different. He has great hands. He has great recovery. He's really disruptive. He's just not like, he's not going to be some of these guys that's on the ball, dogging the ball, staying in front, just incredible point of attack defender. That doesn't mean he can't be neutral or even plus within a system.
So I kind of wanted to ask you about that because he's a good athlete, right? Like, he tested mentioned his recovery speed is really good. His reaction time's great, obviously, because he's got great hands on steals and blocks. So like, Why did he get blown by so much? Why was that something that happened a lot when he's in ISO? It didn't make sense to me, and I'm still confused by it.
Yeah, let me look. I have this pulled up. So let me look just at his, like, his shuttle run. Reed Shepherd. Scrolling. I mean, it's over three. I mean, it's probably middle of the pack. You know, it's like he had a 3.03, for example. So here's what's funny, guys. We talk about Dalton Kenect, right? 2.79 in the shuttle run. Reed was 3.03. You know, Tristan Da Silva, Tristan Newton, some of these guys, lane agility, Dalton Kenect, Devin Carter, or KJ Simpson are the top three. Buzelis is top six, by the way. Reed Shepherd, continue to screw, you know, 10.96. So he was still probably top 20 or so there. So his vertical jump numbers were some of the best. Some of those other numbers, a little more middle of the pack. So is a good athlete, but I would have to really watch the footwork on that end. Maybe it was a Kentucky thing too, right? Like they were not good defensively in general. And again, going back to Kenect, how much has he been coached on some of this stuff? What schemes has he been asked to play in? How was he, you know, was his game broke down in a way to show, hey, you're taking a false step here, you're doing this? Another thing Reed did at times was he got lost off the ball. He'd get ball watchy.
Yeah.
Now he made up for it because his recovery was just silly. But in the NBA, that pass happens a little faster. The shot happens a little faster. The player's 6'8 instead of 6'2, and the contest doesn't matter. So all of these guys have room to grow. Defense is such a hard thing to project, right? Like because of a lot of this, as hard as offense is, defense, I think, is just as hard. But yeah, I mean, he is a good athlete. It would stand to believe that he could. I mean, it's the same thing with Jaden Ivey, though, right? Like Jaden Ivey should be able to stay in front on the ball with his athletic profile. Yeah. And at times, he just isn't able to.
Really quickly, I got one more that I want to ask about Reed Shepherd, because those block numbers are so unique for a guy that small. How much of that do you think might translate into the NBA? Because they were a lot of jump shot blocks. Like that's tough for anybody.
I don't think the blocks translate in terms of the number of blocks. I think what translates is if you count contested jump shots on the perimeter, right? And I think that's something that's valuable. And so as Pistons fans, I don't think if, you know, Reed Shepherd, you know, it was 0.7 blocks per game. I don't think you should expect him to be any more than half a block. I would hope what you see is he just contesting a ton of shots on the perimeter at their highest point, and maybe you get a couple more misses per game than you would otherwise because of that.
All right, let's move on to another one. Let's do a trade back question. All right, here we go. So considering a trade back, this is at Richie Jin on Twitter. He says, if the Pistons were to trade Ivy and or Jalen Duren and the fifth pick, what teams do you think might offer the Pistons the best value? And what could a potential return for that type of like all-in move could the Pistons maybe expect to get?
So I'm pulling up NBA teams. No, that's not going to work.
Cleveland kind of jumps out at me, depending on what they're going to do.
Like, so you think Jared Allen?
Yeah, something like that. Sure. I mean, if Donovan Mitchell is gone and they shift, like that's just initial, like looking at the
Evan
board.
Mobley's there. Just off the table, unfortunately.
I mean, we saw Mobley like be really good in the playoffs. I feel like playing as the primary center. To me, they got to me. If I was Cleveland, I would keep Donovan Mitchell, and I know that's not completely their choice. I would work with Donovan Mitchell and Evan Mobley. And I would find a trade for Darius Garland and Jarrett Allen, like not necessarily together, but I would build around Mitchell and Mobley. That's what I would do.
I would do.
But I mean, that's dangerous with Mitchell in terms of the contract situation. So Jarrett Allen would be an interesting one. I think this would get it done for Brandon Ingram. The thing with the Pelicans is I don't know. They would have to like Duren is the thing. Like they would have to really see the value in Duren in this scenario,
think it could be just one of them. Do you think for Ingram, you'd have to package Ivy, Duren and the pick, or could you maybe get away with just one?
So that's the breaking point for me. And we've talked about the Ingram thing, but if I was going to make the move for Ingram, I would only want to get rid of two, more so because of what I'm going to have to pay Brandon Ingram. to, you know, to extend him. What I wonder is, would they see value in Jaden Ivey, and then they feel like they could draft Donovan Klingon at number five? And then they bring him in and play him with Zion.
Well, that's a better fit than Duren at the five.
I agree, because it gives you the that gives you, I mean, you could be pretty good defensively if he is what people think he is. And then Herb Jones and Trey Murphy and Jose Alvarado, you know, all of that. You just, Zion is your offensive hub. Ideally, they have a big that can space the floor, but we talked, like, those aren't easy to come by, guys. We've talked about that. So maybe they just go with the defensive big and play off of it that way. So that would be the trade that would make more sense to me. The Pistons draft. And to be clear, the Pistons cannot trade this pick before they make it. The Stepien rule would come into play. There's a chance that next year's pick conveys. You know, I guess they could technically work something out with the Knicks that it doesn't convey next year, but they can trade the player after the draft. And so it could be, hey, they draft Kling in for the Pelicans, and then they package Ivy and Kling in for Brandon Ingram. Maybe something like that. I don't know if Ivy makes sense on that roster would be the big thing there, but I know BI's one that comes up. I think you would have to have all three of these at least if you wanted Mikal Bridges. Like, they seem to be asking for a king's ransom. I don't know if you guys have. I'll look through the.
Staying on the Nets for a quick second. Like, could you? I mean, maybe you bring back like Dorian Finney-Smith. I mean, it's tough because like the Nets don't have a pick. So I mean, I'm sure they'd want to get up in this draft, but. The only other team that really sticks out to me is like Toronto, especially after they didn't keep their pick in the lottery too. I don't know if there's something there. They're sitting at 19 with Indiana's pick too.
Brooklyn is interesting because could Brooklyn fall in love with Rob Dillingham, or do they think Reed Shepherd is that guy? You know, like they need somebody to pressure the paint. Maybe, you know, even though Ron Holland's just another wing, he's a guy that can get with the ball in his hands, even though he's not a primary on ball guy, but with the ball in his hands can pressure the paint. You know, maybe they swing for the upside of a Ron Holland. So maybe they would see, I'm not saying I would do that. Just, you know, you're looking at potential guys. Maybe they would get excited about adding to their roster. But again, like, I just think they're too invested. Like, I think they're too committed to Mikal Bridges. If they were going to trade Mikal Bridges, as much as I think it'd be awesome with Cade, the Pistons are going to get outbid in that situation. You know, like, I just don't think they have the assets for that one.
Is there anything here for like the Knicks and Julius Randle? I don't know if I'd want to give up number five in that kind of move, but like Ivy and or Duren plus other stuff. Is there an argument to be made for Julius Randle?
And then the thing with the Knicks though, and what do they do with their other two picks, right? Like they're not a team that's going to want to make three selections in the first round. Trying to think who would be that guy for the Knicks that they would really like. The thing with the Knicks, man, is like, you just got to figure out what Tibbs is doing. Like, what is Tibbs thinking? Who is he actually going to play? You know, we thought this Boyan to Burks and Burks thing to the Knicks was going to be amazing. Like, Alec Burks has been really good recently, but he's only playing because they have 17 dudes hurt. Like, that trade has ended up, at least for this year, Grimes played, what, 6 games for Detroit. Burks was out of the rotation. Boyan's hurt now. I'm like, that trade ended up being like non-important whatsoever in the 2024 context anyway. The Timberwolves are still a team that's interesting, especially if they end up losing tonight. You know, like when they were up 2-0, everybody's like, nope, they're not trading anyway. They'll pay the tax, whatever. They end up losing 4 straight to the team they're literally – oh, I am so sorry, guys. The team they're literally built to beat – they lose to them 4 straight. Maybe they do say like, hey, let's duck the tax and get underneath it. So,
all right, let's do a couple more before we let you go. One more trade back question. This one just wants you to pick out your favorite trade back scenario. So none of these are for stars. Well, I guess Jeremy Grant's kind of sort of a star. Just rank these. This is from Bobby Buckets in the DBB comments. The first one is number 5 for Jeremy Grant and number 14. The second one is number 5 for Keldon Johnson and number 8. The third is number 5 for Walker Kessler and number 10. And then sticking with Utah, could also do number 5 for Taylor Hendricks and number 10. So which of these do you like? How would you rank those?
I think the Keldon Johnson one is the one that stands out the most. And one of the biggest reasons is we talked about earlier, my tier break is at number 9. And so staying at number 8 inside that, I'm staying in my same tier. And so like, I feel like I could get, you know, in that scenario, I think there's a chance I walk out of this with Keldon Johnson and Dalton Kincaid. And that would be pretty exciting for me. Or based on my rankings, you know, it could be Matos then, or it could be Reed Sheppard. Like those are the three guys I have at 7, 8, and 9 are Sheppard, Kincaid, and Matos. So, but because of that, I think the Jeremy Grant one is the one I probably wouldn't do. Listen, I think Jeremy Grant makes a ton of sense on this team. Going back to 14, now I'm not only am I breaking the tier, now I'm into a tier where I'm deep into my second tier. The Jazz ones make a little more sense. Like, but if I'm gonna bring in Walker Kessler, I'm probably moving Jalen Duren in a different move. And yeah. or I'm gonna play him off the bench, I guess. Maybe, you know. And then Taylor Hendricks is interesting. Taylor Hendricks at the 4, not a guy I was as excited about. I said we were a Cam Whitmore podcast over on the Pistons Fools, but Taylor Hendricks is the position that we've talked about is like a floor spacing 4 man. You're still at 10. So do you come out of the draft with Dalton Kincaid and Taylor Hendricks? That's kind of interesting. Your floor spacing just got way, way better in that scenario.
Yeah, I think looking at these moves, the one that sticks out to me is like the Walker Kessler one, just because I think he might, just looking at Utah, I feel like he might be gettable. He was coming off the bench like later on in the year. Like it seems like Taylor Hendricks is a real piece of what they're building. So I doubt he's super gettable. But I think that means Walker Kessler is, and he definitely addresses that rim protection need that you have. So if you can get Walker Kessler and all it takes back is moving 5 spots, I'd say that's a no-brainer. I'm not sure if that's what gets it done, but I think he specifically might be a bit more gettable than we think.
I think what is interesting with where the Pistons landed is it'll be interesting to see if there's guys on the boards that teams would be excited about. So you look at the Spurs one, right? They have pick 4 and 8. Well, why would the Spurs move up to 5? Maybe they do want Rob Dillingham, like we've all talked about. So they want to go get Rob Dillingham and they want to get one of these wings. So I think in the most recent mock I did with Sam, we took Zachary Risacher at 4 to the Spurs. And then we would just assume that Dillingham would go ahead and fall to number 8 for them. Well, what if they feel like somebody else is, you know, in jeopardy of taking him? Well, let's move up to 5 and the Spurs walk out with Risacher and Rob Dillingham, which I think would be a great situation. I think San Antonio is a great fit for Dillingham because Wimby can make up for all of his defensive limitations. For the Jazz, if I was doing this, if I'm the Jazz, I'm trading up for like Ron Holland in this situation. I am taking a swing for the fence. Yeah. This guy has a chance to be a superstar type of situation. And then for the Blazers, they obviously have 7 as well. So this would be, hey, we need one of these wings. We really like this guy. I think the Blazers are in a good situation depending on where Saloon ends up rising into. Like if they can get him at 14, I would stay at 7, draft whoever's there, and then get Saloon at 14.
So question, and this is kind of interesting on that San Antonio one with Keldon Johnson and number 8. So Alamo City Alien is asking about Jaden Ivey to the Spurs for the 8th. And it kind of got me wondering, is Jaden Ivey more or less valuable than that number 5 pick? Because if San Antonio doesn't want to add another, you know, rookie piece, would they rather do Jaden Ivey for Keldon Johnson? And I mean, I don't know if they do 8 there, but maybe that says something about Jaden Ivey and his value too.
Yeah. And for the, I wouldn't do that. Even when we were talking about adding, listen, I'm open to the Pistons trading Jaden Ivey. I'm the biggest Jaden Ivey supporter here. Think he's a great player, all of that stuff. I don't think the organization, I'm not sure Cade Cunningham, I don't want to say likes playing with Jaden, but I don't think that that's the exact type of player that you want off of Cade Cunningham. So, but I would not trade him for number 8. I don't think this team needs to add 2 first round picks again this year. So to go back to what we were talking about earlier, trading back into the first round, I'm not super interested in that. Like we were, unless, hey, there is a blockbuster trade coming of Jaden Ivey, Jalen Duren, Marcus Sasser, all getting moved out for said veteran player. Then there, I have a little more of an appetite to add 2 first round picks. So I wouldn't move Jaden Ivey for, like, I'll just say Sam Vecenie said, like, you know, like Jaden Ivey would be as valuable as any pick in this draft, you know? And so it's like, for number eight, I don't think you're getting the correct value, but maybe he's not as valued around the league. Like, we don't know that. Sam doesn't even know that to that extent. So I would not make that move. Was it number eight or number four? Whichever one. So,
yeah, it was eight. It would have been, I guess, Keldon Johnson and number eight.
Okay. I mean, so Ivy, Spurs,
I don't know if I'd do that.
Ivy in place of the number five pick.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, I mean, that could, I think where that makes sense for San Antonio is you already have two picks in the top eight. Let's go get a guy, right, like you said. And the Pistons are running into this right now with Ivy and Duren. You're having to try to decide, are you going to pay these two guys in the same year? San Antonio is going to run into that same situation.
All right, so let's do one more, and then we'll let you go, Bryce. Thanks for coming on again. This has been great. But this is from ABW17 and DBB's comments, talking about the roster construction. So it says, what roster construction philosophy do you think makes the most sense if Cade Cunningham is going to be the foundation of this team moving forward? So you mentioned, like, maybe Jaden Ivey's not that perfect guy. So what should they be prioritizing? He says maybe a faster or slow pace, size and physicality, or more speed, offense, defense. What would be the vision around Cade Cunningham for you?
Well, I would like offense and defense, please. The guys that can play both. So I'm going to cheat that question. I think really offensively, it's floor spacing. Listen, at the end of the day, I think the Pistons are in a situation where you just have to, if you don't believe Cade is that dude, if you don't believe, as you know, like, I think an interesting comp that's come up recently is Jalen Brunson, right? Like, not the same type of players. They don't do it exactly the same type of way. But if, like, you don't believe he can be that type of player, it's probably time to move on and just start this thing over. Otherwise, build around him with the guys that are going to make him the most successful. And I think that starts with guys that really space the floor and then guys that really defend behind him. The size and physicality versus speed and skill is interesting. I always want the team to play faster. So my gut reaction is fast pace, speed, and skill. But I feel like with the way Cade plays, it almost makes more sense to play a little bit slower. I'm going to say size and skill over size and physicality. Like, I would want the size with the skill around him. So I'm going to kind of intertwine those two.
Yeah, I think what we learned this year, and I mean, I feel like I'm always harping on it, you need to surround Cade with ample floor spacers. If there's not space, it's not working. You also, like, Cade is never going to be your best defender, and you don't want him to be. So you also need to surround him with good defenders. We know we need a rim protector. So that's where I'm at a little bit too. And just back to the spacing, like, when we were talking about Reed Shepherd and how he can open things up by other teams just worrying about what he's potentially able to do on the 3-point line, that just allows more things to happen. So I think that has to be your priority. In most drafts, it's like best player available. I feel like this one, you're in a little bit more of a position to draft for team need and fit. There are some prospects I would take no matter what over others, but where the Pistons are, I think no matter where they land, if they stay in this fifth spot or are somewhere in the top 10, I think they're in a position to bring in a player who helps fit what will make Cade Cunningham the best player possible.
I mean, if you stick with the Jalen Brunson thing, though, like, size and physicality is what that team has with, you know, the big guys behind him, Isaiah Hartenstein. Josh Hart isn't, like, necessarily the biggest dude, but, like, he's strong and super physical.
Plays huge.
Deuce McBride is super physical. Dante DiVincenzo would be, like, the skill, right? Like, just the way he shoots the ball. So it's interesting. I'm also, like, I'm interested if I'm wrong about Cade Cunningham and kind of the role he wants to play. You know, like, I've kind of bought into, I'm not saying he has to be that heliocentric. I want to be clear on that too. Like, Jalen Brunson dribbled the ball more times than NBA, anybody in the NBA. I'm not saying he has to be over the top. I'm just saying, like, I think Cade wants the ball in his hands. I think he wants to run the show, and just, let's find out. Let's really put floor spacers around him. Let's put some defenders on the other end and let's see how good he can be in that role.
All right, let's bring the show full circle and then we'll end on this. So, of what you just described, you know, big, skilled, can play both ends and can thrive in the half court. Who's the guy at the top of this draft that like best fills into those things for you?
Like, I mean, Matos is the answer if he could shoot. And then, like, I really believe this, that Matos is the guy that could be a two-way player that is skilled, especially as a four-man, a forward, and potentially as a big. Now, the problem is, like we talked about earlier, his physicality isn't one of his strong suits, and we're not sure he can shoot. To me, all roads continue to lead back to Zachary Risacher because I think he can defend. Yep. I think he can space the floor. I think he plays off the ball really well. A guy we didn't talk a lot about was Steph Castle. Blake, you said it. Point correct here. Steph Castle, I think, is the best perimeter defender at the top of the draft, at least. Steph Castle is very skilled. Steph Castle can cut off the ball, offensive rebound, all of those things. Could probably be your backup point guard, as Wes and I talked about earlier today, just through text messages and stuff. Can you space the floor? That's the question with Steph Castle. And can you afford to add Steph Castle to a roster, assuming it is a roster that still has non-floor spacer in Asar Thompson, non-floor spacer in Jalen Duren, and very questionable floor spacer in Jaden Ivey? I don't know. But Steph Castle is probably a really good answer in terms of physical, skilled, high feel, good defender. Not sure he can shoot.
Yeah, that's an interesting name to me, and one I'm thinking more about. Like, James Edwards at The Athletic released a big board today, and Steph Castle was at the top of it. And one of the things that James mentioned is, like, he thinks, and Steph Castle thinks, that he's a better shooter than the numbers showed. And I remember I actually watched an interview with that Modest did a while ago, and he was asked who stuck out to him. It was either from the McDonald's All-American game or Nike Hoop Summit. And the name he said was Steph Castle. Like, he was like, that dude is just so good. So while that fit didn't stick out to me a ton throughout the year, I'm thinking more and more about it now because he kind of fits the mold of players that have been drafted, and we don't know who's going to be making these decisions, but he's like the perfect player to put next to Cade defensively, at least. Yes. And if he can shoot it somewhat, like, you never know.
He's the perfect player in terms of all of the stuff other than the floor spacing. Mm-hmm. Honestly, if it wasn't Jaden Ivey and Asar and Duren already on the roster, and maybe this is, I need to change my thinking. Like, hey, just take this dude and figure it out with those other guys, because this dude can really play. But in terms of a guy that can play off of Cade when he needs to, cutting, offensive rebounding, go watch a Connecticut game. They use him as a short roller and all of those things, and then really defends on the other end. That's a lot of stuff we've talked about Cade Cunningham needing. And then Cade's off the floor. Perfect. Let's give Steph the ball and let him run some ball screens and initiate the offense. You can do that if the other three guys are floor spacers, right? If the other three guys are Fontecchio, free agent that space the floor at the big positions, that's just not the roster this team has. But you know what, guys? Maybe that's telling in the sense, who said it, that this pick doesn't have to solve the floor spacing problems, right? Like, the free agency or a trade can solve some of those problems. So if Steph is the best player, take Steph. And then maybe you have to trade some of these other guys to get the floor spacing to make it work. I understand that argument 100%.
And really quickly, I'm sorry, I got to slip one more in because I just realized, and we're going to get lit up for this. We've gone an hour and 14 minutes, and we've not even mentioned Cody Williams, I think. So why are you lower on Cody Williams than the collective of Pistons fans right now? And then we'll let you go if you have time.
Yeah. Listen, Cody leads the top of my second tier of players. I think he's really talented. I think he's really skilled. He may have the best touch in the lane of any guy we've talked about. He's very skinny, and everybody's, well, look at his brother. Not every sibling grows into the same body. And so I can't just count on him filling his body out the way that J-Dub has filled his out. I can't get past the mentality, guys. And that's what holds me back from getting him into the top 10. He was just so passive. Now, I've had people tell me, Bryce, you're being too hard on him. He wore a mask. He had another injury. Like, you need to, like, take that stuff into account more. And I think that's fair.
I wore a mask. He's fine.
I know. You, Wes and I disagree on the mask thing, because I the mask I did not like when I had to wear it in college. But I think it was more so like he had broke his nose, so it was like we're a little worried about taking the hit again. But anyway, so I just can't get past that stuff and get him in the top 10. And so again, it's like there's not a situation I can find myself, even if the first four picks are completely the wrong ones to make it best situation for Detroit, there's still guys I would have above him. And so because of that, I've kind of left him out of the conversation for the Detroit Pistons specifically.
I think a little bit of it too is, I mean, there were definitely moments in his season at Colorado. He was fighting through injuries, but playing with KJ Simpson and Tristan Da Silva, like great college basketball players, I think lended itself to that a little bit. And coming back from those injuries, he might have just taken some time to get going. But there were times where he was not really like notable on the floor, which is definitely a concern. And man, I understand why he didn't, but I really wish that Cody was playing in the 5-on-5 scrimmages at the combine. Yes. I feel like he could have really helped his stock if he did.
And I think real quick, people are going to, he's a 42% three-point shooter. He only took 41 attempts. So like it's barely a sample size to go off of with that. And he was 71% from the free throw line. So, you know, Cody's a guy, for example, where at the combine, I don't care as much about the numbers. I would have loved to be able to watch him shoot to see how much I just buy into the mechanics and some of those things, because we didn't have the same sample size as some other guys. And I do think knocking down shots is something that's important for him.
Wes, any Cody Williams thoughts before we wrap it up here?
No, I'm going to get in too much trouble. So, Bryce, just thank you so much for coming on. Love when we were able to get you on. Love the insight you could give on the draft. So tell everybody, obviously, where they can find the Pistons Pulse, but also where they can find all your other stuff, the Substack, everything.
Yeah, so at Motor City Hoops on Twitter, Pistons, NBA, NBA Draft. I don't tweet quite as much as I used to, but if you hit me up with a DM, I always love the interaction. Mostly, I just kind of tweet out the content I'm putting out. So over on the Substack, I have the Motor City Hoops Substack and then the Basketball Bulletin Substack with Trevor Lane and Keith Smith. And then the Game Theory Podcast with Sam Vecini. You know, we record 2-3 times a week talking all things NBA, NBA draft over there. And then the Pistons Pulse on the Detroit Free Press YouTube with my guy, Amari Sankoff II, Pistons beat writer for the Detroit Free Press, and Wes Davenport producing, running the show. Wes will be on Tuesday's episode. We're doing a mock draft. We're bringing on our guy, Stephen Gillespie from No Ceilings, and we'll do a 4-person mock draft. I think just the lottery or something like that. That's probably about all we'll have time to get to, but we appreciate any support on any of those platforms, and make sure you guys continue to come back to the Pin Down every week. Everything they're putting out at Detroit Bad Boys, these guys are big time, doing big time things. So make sure you're supporting them in all the ways you can.
Thank you, Bryce. We really appreciate you taking the time to come on. You have so much going on, so can't thank you enough for taking.
Thank my wife. Tell my wife thank you.
Oh my gosh, yeah, give her a thanks for me. But reminder everyone. Call our phone line and ask a question.
This is such a cool idea, guys.
Shout out to Wes. This was all Wes. He powers however it works. I didn't
stole
even know
it from a different podcast. Don't give me any credit.
But yeah, reminder that you can call in and hear your voice on the show. Try to limit your question to around 45 seconds or so we can fit everything in. The number for that is 313-355-2717. And special thanks, as always, to our guy, Sean Court, managing editor of Detroit Bad Boys, for supporting the show. And shout out to you guys, everyone who joined us in the chat and pre-submitted questions, for all the great talking points tonight. We'll catch you next week, whether on your commute or live with us here. We can't wait to talk more Detroit hoops.